Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
How about one of your most memorable times with Martin Luther King Jr.?
Civil rights movement had a lot of leaders. Martin was just probably the number one leader. And his philosophy was passive resistance. And I am totally against passive resistance or nonviolence. Nonviolence is something that's applicable to all human beings. You know, all of us should not be violent. But that's not a movement. A movement is proactive. And so I admired his courage and his sincerity, but I didn't think that nonviolence was a solution to the problem of inequality in America. I thought that nonviolence meant that you'd march and sing, and you would try to appeal to the consciousness of the same people that were discriminating against you. So my concept was, how can you get to the consciousness of a person that has no consciousness and who is relegating you to a second-class citizenship because of your color? So I thought economic development and a sense of cultural power would be a better way to fight, because capitalism in America was riding high and you need resources. And as I looked at the Jewish community, they applied it fantastically. And as I looked around at the community I mean, the Korean communities, they seem to be applying it. And it seemed that people that took care of themselves and dealt with economic development and had high family values and didn't try to integrate would do a better job of integrating. But integration can't be your goal. And I give an example. If I want to live in a white neighborhood and they jack the prices up, but I want to integrate it for the sake of integrating it, I pay twice as much for the house. That's like paying twice as much to live with white folks. I never thought that was very valuable, just living with white folks. I thought to have my rights under the Constitution. And I would always say to Martin's people, you know, I'm of African descent. I'm an American citizen. I pay my damn taxes, and I want my rights. Underline that, and you can't challenge it, okay? I'm a citizen, you're a citizen, you pay your taxes, I pay my taxes, you get your rights, I get my rights.
For more clips from this interview, visit GrahamBensinger.com.
We're back with another installment of Visit My House. Yesterday, we couldn't get in. Man, that's probably for over an hour. But Blog Talk, every so often, every blue moon occasionally, had some technical difficulties, so I couldn't get in. Couldn't log into the studio at all. Anyway, but we're back today. Today's podcast is titled Immigrant Millionaires in Black Neighborhoods. Immigrant Millionaires in Black Neighborhoods, 619-768-2945. And although these people, immigrants I'm speaking of, they're not marching to Mars. But you have several people, several hundred, several thousand people marching, walking, whatever you want to call it, from Honduras and Guatemala and other places in South America, Central America, and some from South America that have found their way to Central America, and then they're walking. Some are jumping on trains. They didn't buy a ticket, but some are jumping on trains. But many are walking distances of 1,000 miles or more. Some are walking probably 1,000 miles, maybe a little bit more than that, to get to the border of the United States. And then, of course, once they're in, they're going to some that do get in, and some will get in. They're going to other destinations where they might know people or they've read about or whatever. There's Chicago, D.C., Boston, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, Miami, Florida. And what they're doing, well, let me put it this way. Just let me cut to the chase. Because the title of today's podcast is Immigrant Millionaires in Black Neighborhoods. Some of these people, some are single mothers with children. They're all kind of demographic. Some are kids without adults. Some of these people, in a few short years, matter of fact, probably in a matter of months, let's say 24 I'm going to put 24 months to 60 months. That's anywhere from 2 to 5 years. Some of these people will become millionaires in black neighborhoods.
U.S. border agents in this residential neighborhood of Roma, Texas, get word that an illegal border crosser has been spotted hiding in somebody's backyard. They apprehend him, but he's not talking. The question is, are there more with him?
Is this all of them, Adam?
No, actually, it's not all of them. Another border crosser is seen here making a run for it, while border agents with the first guy they caught are down the street. So he keeps running and disappears into the night. More border agents arrive to track him down, going house to house in search of him. Roma, Texas, where there is no border wall, is one of the most popular places to cross into the United States for border crossers. The majority of them in the last several months have been families from Central America and unaccompanied minors like this brother and sister picked up on the side of the street. More than 100 border crossers will be apprehended tonight here in Roma.
¿De dónde eres?
Honduras.
Honduras. ¿Por qué vengas aquí?
Por una seguridad.
¿Qué?
Por una seguridad.
¿Cómo está la vida en Honduras?
En Honduras está tremendo la delincuencia y la hambruna.
¿Su hijos?
Mi hijo es él.
¿Qué piensas ahorita?
Algo muy especial. Muy tan alegre porque me permite estar aquí.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Jefferson Cuesta.
¿Cuántos años tienes?
14 años.
¿Y por qué vengas aquí?
Pues para darle un mejor futuro a mi hija, ya que soy madre soltera y me esfuerzo para poder sacarla adelante.
¿Quién tiene bota?
Portillo Ramos.
All of them arriving here from just across this river, the Rio Grande, from the town of Miguel Alemán on the Mexican side. Immigrants routinely filmed being paddled across the river by human smugglers in rubber boats and rafts to the U.S. side of the river. Many border crossers arriving in this neighborhood along the riverbanks of the Rio Grande, known as Colonia de la Cruz, a neighborhood under virtual around-the-clock surveillance by U.S. Border Patrol agents. Some residents here making it clear they don't want border crossers coming through here. One homeowner posting a sign that implies he'll shoot them on sight. Though some residents here are said to be working with smugglers as lookouts on this side, hiding border crossers in their homes when they first arrive here. People living here say no one is ever quite certain who is who walking the streets.
This is one of six cameras that I have, and it's pointed to my backyard.
Resident Maria Rios has not one, but six surveillance cameras mounted around her house and in the backyard. She says her husband put them up because he's often out of town for work. Maria can watch her granddaughters playing outside and watches for anyone who might be jumping into her backyard after crossing from the river.
The river is right there behind those trees.
What scares her, she says, are warnings from the current U.S. president that many border crossers are, quote, bad hombres.
We don't know who these people are, right? Like, they could be gang members, rapists. We don't know who they are. So this is why I'm afraid, like I said, I live by myself most of the time. I'm afraid that one of these days, one of them is, they're going to come into here and, you know, go into my house and, you know, do something to us. You know, I have neighbors here that making a living out of all these people that are crossing and...
And they let them stay in their houses?
Yeah. That's why the Border Patrol thinks that everybody's doing it.
There are times when you come across 8, 10, 12...
U.S. Border Patrol spokesman Marcelino Medina tells us that apprehensions of illegal border crossers in Roma have been steadily increasing, and not just in Roma. But all along 300 miles or 500 kilometers of the Rio Grande on the U.S.-Mexico border. An unprecedented mass migration of families, he says, mostly from Central America, the highest levels in a decade, with more than 75,000 immigrants in total crossing into the United States per month. Here along the Rio Grande, often more than 1,000 per day.
Just this week, on Tuesday, the agents here in the River and Valley sector apprehended 1,300 people. But the majority of the people that we do see in this area are Central Americans, and they are family units and unaccompanied children.
However, what often happens, he says, is that while families are being apprehended, drug traffickers and other criminals use the opportunity to slip past.
They'll exploit those areas and get commodities across, like narcotics.
Though drug traffickers are often caught in the act on surveillance cameras attached to blimps positioned all along the Rio Grande. Blimps that have become a virtual electronic border wall that are widely credited for an increase in border crosser apprehensions.
Additionally, surveillance towers equipped with cameras like this one, for example, have gone up in border communities like Maria Rios's De La Cruz neighborhood in Roma. And on the banks of the Rio Grande in Roma is this U.S. Army National Guard unit using thermal imagery technology to stop smugglers coming across the river at night. For example, they've just radioed U.S. Border Patrol Agent Ferguson here that human smugglers are just 10 feet from him down below on the riverbank. He can actually hear them talking. The smugglers see the camera light and assume correctly a journalist is filming them. Agent Ferguson finds the smugglers stranded on this large tree limb in the water. They tell Ferguson the boat that dropped them off has returned to the Mexican side. A young female passenger between them remains silent. To Agent Ferguson's surprise, one of the smugglers casually lights up and smokes some marijuana.
Marijuana.
See what I deal with?
Espérate, güey. ¿Qué hiciste, mi hermano, güey?
No, güey.
Aquí con estos vatos que no dejan cruzar para allá, para Roma, Texas. Uno que quiere ser... ¡Ay! Uno que quiere hacer la buena vida.
Sí.
Y estos vatos no dejan cruzar. No, ¡eh, sueño, vato! Sí.
Sí,
mucho tiempo trabajando.
Dos horas más.
Y yo sé.
I said, I have 2 hours left, and he said, yeah, I know.
Tenemos todo controlado también, hasta Roma. Sí. Ya sabemos el horario.
I think they know our schedules and all the rules and stuff better than we do.
Ferguson needs to investigate another call and tells the smugglers to return to Mexico.
Gringo, ¿cuándo le van a subir ese?
En un, dos semanas, tres semanas, sí. En el todo el mundo.
Ya me morí. A la mejor ya me mataron en México, quién sabe. Son fácil toda la vida.
So they're seldom carrying weapons?
Yeah, not very often. You'll get the occasional, you know, pocket knife.
Ferguson says last night in this abandoned building, he found several border crossers hiding among dozens of bats that he caught on his smartphone. Right in here?
Yep.
Hey!
Presently, he spots a mother and her teenage daughter who don't appear to be Central American.
Romanian.
Okay. They're from Romania?
Yeah, Romania.
The smugglers who escorted them here evidently left them to fend for themselves. They speak no English. And Ferguson and the cameraman know only two words in Romanian.
Nadia Comăneci, of Romania.
The name of famous Romanian Olympic gymnast Nadia Comăneci.
Nadia Comăneci, Romania.
They'll now be driven to a U.S. detention center 50 miles from here. Their first full day in the U.S. spent here with hundreds of other border crossers, primarily from Central America, pleading to stay in the United States, while life goes on without them outside these walls.
Come and get it.
People here in Roma, Texas say people in other states take cell phone video of deer crossing the road. In Roma, you're just as likely to see a border crosser. Many residents here will tell you they just try to mind their own business. But in fact, they're usually always on the lookout for the next border crosser that might be coming their way.
Anybody will be finding more walking up, just to know if there's more coming up.
For example, this group of border crossers has just been apprehended outside this local coffee shop tonight as employee Dimna Gian finishes making an iced coffee. What about you here working by yourself at night?
So I do see illegal immigrants coming by. We talk to Border Patrol and they do patrol, so they're always around the area. It does make me nervous sometimes, but I've never been scared for or felt like I'm in danger in any way, because I don't think most of them come to cause harm to us. Well, my family, we're an immigrant family also, so if it weren't for being able to cross over, we wouldn't be here either.
10-4.
And Dimna says she's against building a wall through Roma to stop them.
Personally, I don't think we need a wall. I think maybe just more regulation and enforcement.
They were born last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Life began to slowly change here in Roma, says Maria Rios, after the September 11th attacks in the United States. When she says border crossers started showing up in Roma when they could no longer get around border walls in border states west of here. So she says they started crossing here at Roma, where there's never been a wall. A wall, Maria says, a majority of residents here are against. Her solution for stopping border crossers.
Give them visas to come over. That way it won't be a business for the, you know, for other people.
Admittedly, says Maria, she has a soft spot for immigrants coming from Mexico. It was her grandfather on her mom's side, Sebastian de la Cruz, who moved from Mexico decades ago, arriving here on the U.S. side of the Rio Grande, buying all this land that today is Colonia de la Cruz, named in his honor.
This is our land, my land.
We have a final count. We'll go ahead and lock it down.
Maria says today all the security along the river has changed the simple life she remembers growing up here as a girl when she and her cousins spent most of their day at the river.
And everybody would get together and let's go to the river and we would come and swim. We'd swim in the river.
It's a very unique culture.
These days on the U.S. side of the river, says local resident Dina Garcia Pena, most people won't go near the river because of so many border agents around. That includes U.S. Border Patrol boats. She says residents here can no longer enjoy what was once a well-maintained public picnic area and family park on the U.S. side of the river.
We have actually quite a bit of picnic tables in areas that families could use on a day-to-day basis that right now are completely overgrown with brush and weeds, and unfortunately it's just not very welcoming. There's not even a way to get down anymore. And if you look at the Mexican side, even on the Mexican side, you can see families enjoying themselves. On any given day, you can see people fishing on the river. And that's just not what you see on the American side.
Hola.
Hola.
Buenas
tardes.
Buenas tardes,
señora.
Buenas tardes.
Dina is a mom and a local journalist, publishing a widely read local weekly newspaper here and website about life in the Rio Grande Valley. She works here in this office in the back of her husband's auto body shop. Her husband, Jorge, back in the day, swam across the Rio Grande as an undocumented immigrant before receiving legal documents to stay.
94.
And Dina says her father came here years ago without papers from Mexico before becoming naturalized and becoming a successful businessman.
My parents both immigrated into the U.S. My mom cleaned houses for a living, and somehow she and my father were able to create a great life for themselves and for us. And I sometimes think about my father living in Mexico, and if he had not crossed the river, where would we be? I mean, where would I be? And instead, I grew up in a land of great opportunity in a country that I love and that I believe is better than me.
Dina says if a wall is built on the riverbanks in Roma, people will lose their homes. And she says the wall would go right through a major bird sanctuary here. Presently, a tourist couple visiting from Wisconsin tell Dina they support a wall here and that stopping border crossers is more important than residents here complaining about possibly losing their homes to a border wall.
What right do you have to come in and take it from me?
And I understand that, but is stopping your house more important than stopping bad people from coming across?
The woman acknowledges that back where she's from in the U.S. state of Wisconsin, her town uses a lot of undocumented Mexicans to do their work.
In our little town, we have we have dairy farmers, and many of the people that work there are from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just the fact that I don't want bad people come across.
Pulled wild hog tacos are one of the main draws here tonight in town. The guy who makes them, Nick Garza. Nick's the city finance director for the city of Roma, and he's also an outspoken critic of the U.S. president's claims that Roma is being overrun by violent criminals and gangs from Mexico.
The problem seems to be in Mexico and not in the United States. We haven't seen, even though we don't have a border, we don't have a wall, we don't see the violence spreading out to our local town.
And as far as a national emergency, Nick says, just look around town. Does this look like a national emergency, he says?
No, there's not an emergency here. I don't agree that there's an emergency here.
At 2 o'clock in the morning...
Though illegal immigrants keep coming. This family from Honduras has just been dropped at the river down below, joining other families here who've turned themselves into Border Patrol agents. Jessica Valeriano says she came here with her son and her cousin, Barbigal Valladares.
Muy dura. Yo hace como un mes me intentaron arrebatar mi vida. Y entonces yo dejo a mi esposa y una bebé de un año y mi madre. Y pues es muy duro, me duele dejarlos, pero ella me dijeron que me fuera mejor para morir. Y ella me dijo que vamos a traer un niño.
Critics of the U.S. government's handling of border crossers here say the only real national emergency is how they are often treated when arriving here. For example, on this very chilly evening, U.S. border agents follow orders, they say, from Washington to search them, telling them to remove their shoes and shoelaces and other clothing. Part of the process, border agents say, of searching for weapons, no matter their ages, confiscating much of their personal belongings, toys included. This youth told he has too many shirts on. It's unclear how many elected leaders in Washington have come to Roma to witness what happens here each night. While most families here say they've come to the U.S. for a better life, they are finding out rather quickly that the asylum they seek is seldom automatic and increasingly never granted.
No,
Many of them have spent their life savings, they say, paying smugglers to bring them here, only in the end to find themselves being marched into U.S. government vans like bad hombres.
Yeah, be advised, transport's going out there to pick up some of those bodies.
For a long ride in the night to a U.S. immigration detention facility 50 miles from here. Uncertain how it will all end.
The scene at the border. Dramatic pictures of the chaos in Tijuana, Mexico over the past 24 hours. Hundreds of migrants from Central America attempted to storm the U.S. border, desperate to reach U.S. soil. U.S. authorities and Mexican police took unprecedented measures to stop them. And photographers captured this image, a woman leading her young children running from the tear gas fired by U.S. authorities. That picture is getting a lot of attention even this morning. So let's go to Lindsay Duncombe, who's in Washington, on this story. Tell us, in anyone not following over the course of the weekend, what happened on the border or at the border over these last 24 hours, Lindsay?
Well, it began, Heather, as a protest. People who are staying in camps at the edge of the U.S. border with Mexico are frustrated with the fact that such a small number of people, just dozens really, are being processed every day. So they planned this march, which was to raise attention to that. Of those marchers, though, some of them started to rush the border, and officials say they started throwing things at the border guard, and as a result, the border officials took the step that they took, which is to fire that tear gas into the crowd to disperse them away from the border. And at the same time, the U.S. officials actually shut down this incredibly busy border crossing for several hours. And certainly, it shows us how that frustration that is building, the desperation that is building, is really reaching this crisis point at the border.
So what is going to happen next then, do you think?
Well, we need to watch this from the political side of things, because this is motivating Donald Trump to continue to push his idea of a border wall. And the images that you see there of people crashing into the border are things that are expected to help him in that push. In a tweet, he said, Congress fund the wall. And that's significant because the Republicans just have 39 days where they have control of the House of Representatives. And it is possible that some parts of the government could shut down as Donald Trump continues to push for funding for that wall. He also is putting pressure on Mexico because there is a lot of developments happening between the two countries as they try to figure out what to do with the migrants. Because on Saturday, Heather, the new president of Mexico will be sworn in. And there are reports that the U.S. and Mexico have reached an agreement that would mean that migrants who are making their way from Central America, who are processed, would not be allowed into the United States to wait for their immigration proceedings, but rather would have that happen in Mexico. Unclear if that's exactly what the new president has agreed to, but this crisis over the weekend, the flashpoint in the incident, really is a backdrop for congressional negotiations as well as these bilateral negotiations between the U.S. and Mexico.
Lindsay, thank you very much. Lindsay Duncombe there in Washington.
U.S. border agents in this residential neighborhood of Roma, Texas, get word that an illegal border crosser has been spotted hiding in somebody's backyard. They apprehend him, but he's not talking. The question is, are there more with him?
Is this all of them, Adam?
No, actually, it's not all of them. Another border crosser is seen here making a run for it. while border agents with the first guy they caught are down the street. So he keeps running and disappears into the night. More border agents arrive to track him down, going house to house in search of him. Roma, Texas, where there is no border wall, is one of the most popular places to cross into the United States for border crossers. The majority of them in the last several months have been families from Central America and unaccompanied minors like this brother and sister picked up on the side of the street. More than 100 border crossers will be apprehended tonight here in Roma.
¿De dónde eres?
Honduras.
Honduras. ¿Por qué vengas aquí?
Por una seguridad.
¿Qué?
Por una seguridad.
¿Cómo está la vida en Honduras?
En Honduras está tremendo la delincuencia y la hambruna.
¿Sus hijos?
Mi hijo es él.
¿Qué piensas ahorita?
Algo muy especial. Muy... tan alegre porque mi pedía estar aquí.
¿Cómo te llamas?
Jefferson.
¿Cuántos años tienes?
14 años.
¿Y por qué vengas aquí?
Pues para darle un mejor futuro a mi hija, ya que soy madre soltera y me esfuerzo para poder sacarla adelante.
All of them arriving here from just across this river, the Rio Grande, from the town of Miguel Alemán on the Mexican side. Immigrants routinely filmed being paddled across the river by human smugglers in rubber boats and rafts to the U.S. side of the river. Many border crossers arriving in this neighborhood along the riverbanks of the Rio Grande, known as Colonia de la Cruz, a neighborhood under virtual around-the-clock surveillance by U.S. Border Patrol agents. Some residents here making it clear they don't want border crossers coming through here, one homeowner posting a sign that implies he'll shoot them on sight. Though some residents here are said to be working with smugglers as lookouts on this side, hiding border crossers in their homes when they first arrive here. People living here say no one is ever quite certain who is who walking the streets.
This is one of six cameras that I have, and it's pointed to my backyard.
Resident Maria Rios has not one, but six surveillance cameras mounted around her house and in the backyard. She says her husband put them up because he's often out of town for work. Maria can watch her granddaughters playing outside and watches for anyone who might be jumping into her backyard after crossing from the river.
The river is right there behind those trees.
What scares her, she says, are warnings from the current U.S. president that many border crossers are, quote, bad hombres.
We don't know who these people are, right? Like, they could be gang members, rapists. We don't know who they are. So this is why I'm afraid, like I said, I live by myself most of the time. I'm afraid that one of these days, one of them is, they're going to come in into here and, you know, go into my house and, you know, do something to us. You know, I have neighbors here that making a living out of all these people that are crossing and...
And they let them stay in their houses?
Yeah. That's why the Border Patrol thinks that everybody's doing it.
There are times when you come across 8, 10, 12.
U.S. Border Patrol spokesman Marcelino Medina tells us that apprehensions of illegal border crossers in Roma have been steadily increasing, and not just in Roma, but all along 300 miles or 500 kilometers of the Rio Grande on the U.S.-Mexico border. An unprecedented mass migration of families, he says, mostly from Central America, the highest levels in a decade, with more than 75,000 immigrants in total crossing into the United States per month. Here along the Rio Grande, often more than 1,000 per day.
Just this week, and on Tuesday, the agents here in the River Valley sector apprehended 1,300 people. But the majority of the people that we do see in this area are Central Americans, and they are family units and unaccompanied children.
However, what often happens, he says, is that while families are being apprehended, drug traffickers and other criminals use the opportunity to slip past.
They'll exploit those areas and get commodities across, like narcotics.
Though drug traffickers are often caught in the act on surveillance cameras attached to blimps positioned all along the Rio Grande. Blimps that have become a virtual electronic border wall that are widely credited for an increase in border crosser apprehensions. Additionally, surveillance towers equipped with cameras like this one, for example, have gone up in border communities like Maria Rios's De La Cruz neighborhood in Roma. And on the banks of the Rio Grande in Roma is this U.S. Army National Guard unit using thermal imagery technology to stop smugglers coming across the river at night. For example, they've just radioed U.S. Border Patrol Agent Ferguson here that human smugglers are just 10 feet from him down below on the riverbank. He can actually hear them talking. The smugglers see the camera light and assume correctly a journalist is filming them. Agent Ferguson finds the smugglers stranded on this large tree limb in the water. They tell Ferguson the boat that dropped them off has returned to the Mexican side. A young female passenger between them remains silent. To Agent Ferguson's surprise, one of the smugglers casually lights up and smokes some marijuana.
See what I deal with?
Espérate, güey. ¿Qué hiciste, güey?
No. Aquí con estos vatos que no dejan cruzar para allá, para Roma, Texas. Uno que quiere ser... ¡Ay! Uno que quiere hacer la buena vida.
Sí.
Y estos vatos no dejan cruzar.
No te
sabes nada, ¡sueño, vato!
Sí.
Sí, sí. Mucho tiempo trabajando.
Dos horas más.
Y yo sé.
I said, I have 2 hours left, and he said, yeah, I know.
Tenemos todo controlado también, hasta Roma. Sí. Ya tenemos el horario.
I think they know our schedules and all the rules and stuff better than we do.
Ferguson needs to investigate another call and tells the smugglers to return to Mexico.
Gringo, ¿cuándo le van a subir ese?
En un, dos semanas, tres semanas, sí. En el todo el mundo.
Ya me morí. A lo mejor ya me mataron en el México, quién sabe. No es fácil toda la vida.
So they're seldom carrying weapons?
Yeah, not very often. You'll get the occasional, you know, pocket knife.
Ferguson says last night in this abandoned building, he found several border crossers hiding among dozens of bats that he caught on his smartphone. Right in here?
Yep.
Hey!
Presently, he spots a mother and her teenage daughter who don't appear to be Central American.
Brazil?
Romanian.
Oh, Romanian.
Romanian.
Okay.
Never mind.
They're from Romania?
Yeah, Romania.
The smugglers who escorted them here evidently left them to fend for themselves. They speak no English. and Ferguson and the cameraman know only two words in Romanian.
Nadia Comăneci of Romania.
The name of famous Romanian Olympic gymnast Nadia Comăneci.
Nadia Comăneci. Romania.
They'll now be driven to a U.S. detention center 50 miles from here. Their first full day in the U.S. spent here with hundreds of other border crossers, primarily from Central America, pleading to stay in the United States, while life goes on without them outside these walls. People here in Roma, Texas say people in other states take cell phone video of deer crossing the road. In Roma, you're just as likely to see a border crosser. Many residents here will tell you they just try to mind their own business. But in fact, they're usually always on the lookout for the next border crosser that might be coming their way.
Does anybody have any finding more walking up just to know if there's more coming up?
For example, this group of border crossers has just been apprehended outside this local coffee shop tonight as employee Dimna Gian finishes making an iced coffee.
What about you here working by yourself at night?
So I do see illegal immigrants coming by. We talk to Border Patrol and they do patrol, so they're always around the area. It does make me nervous sometimes, but I've never been scared for or felt like I'm in danger in any way, because I don't think most of them come to cause harm to us. Well, my family, we're an immigrant family also, so if it weren't for being able to cross over, we wouldn't be here either.
10-4.
And Dimna says she's against building a wall through Roma to stop them.
Personally, I don't think we need a wall. I think maybe just more regulation and enforcement.
They were born last night, right? Mm-hmm. Life began to slowly change here in Roma, says Maria Rios, after the September 11th attacks in the United States. When she says border crossers started showing up in Roma when they could no longer get around border walls in border states west of here. So she says they started crossing here at Roma, where there's never been a wall. A wall, Maria says, a majority of residents here are against. Her solution for stopping border crossers.
Give them visas to come over. That way it won't be a business for the, you know, for other people.
Admittedly, says Maria, she has a soft spot for immigrants coming from Mexico. It was her grandfather on her mom's side, Sebastian de la Cruz, who moved from Mexico decades ago, arriving here on the U.S. side of the Rio Grande, buying all this land that today is Colonia de la Cruz, named in his honor.
This is our land, my land.
We have a final count. We'll go ahead and log it down.
Maria says today all the security along the river has changed the simple life she remembers growing up here as a girl when she and her cousins spent most of their day at the river.
And everybody would get together and let's go to the river and we would come and swim. We'd swim in the river.
It's a very unique culture.
These days on the U.S. side of the river, says local resident Dina Garcia Pena, most people won't go near the river because of so many border agents around. That includes U.S. Border Patrol boats. She says residents here can no longer enjoy what was once a well-maintained public picnic area and family park on the U.S. side of the river.
We have actually quite a bit of picnic tables in areas that families could use on a day-to-day basis that right now are completely overgrown with brush and weeds, and unfortunately it's just not very welcoming. There's not even a way to get down anymore. And if you look at the Mexican side, even on the Mexican side, you can see families enjoying themselves. on any given day, you can see people fishing on the river. And that's just not what you see on the American side.
Hola.
Hola. Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes,
señora.
Buenas tardes.
Dina is a mom and a local journalist, publishing a widely read local weekly newspaper here and website about life in the Rio Grande Valley. She works here in this office in the back of her husband's auto body shop. Her husband Jorge, back in the day, swam across the Rio Grande as an undocumented immigrant before receiving legal documents to stay.
94.
And Dina says her father came here years ago without papers from Mexico before becoming naturalized and becoming a successful businessman.
My parents both immigrated into the U.S. My mom cleaned houses for a living, and somehow she and my father were able to create a great life for themselves and for us. And I sometimes think about my father living in Mexico, and if he had not crossed the river, where would we be? I mean, where would I be? And instead, I grew up in a land of great opportunity in a country that I love and that I believe is better than this.
Dina says if a wall is built on the riverbanks in Roma, people will lose their homes. And she says the wall would go right through a major bird sanctuary here. Presently, a tourist couple visiting from Wisconsin tell Dina they support a wall here and that stopping border crossers is more important than residents here complaining about possibly losing their homes to a border wall.
What right do you have to come in and take it from me?
And I understand that, but is stopping your house more important than stopping bad people from coming across?
The woman acknowledges that back where she's from in the U.S. state of Wisconsin, her town uses a lot of undocumented Mexicans to do their work.
In our little town, we have we have dairy farmers, and many of the people that work there are from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just the fact that I don't want bad people come across.
Pulled wild hog tacos are one of the main draws here tonight in town. The guy who makes them, Nick Garza. Nick's the city finance director for the city of Roma, and he's also an outspoken critic of the U.S. president's claims that Roma is being overrun by violent criminals and gangs from Mexico.
The problem seems to be in Mexico and not in the United States. We haven't seen, even though we don't have a border, we don't have a law, we don't see the violence spreading out to our local town.
And as far as a national emergency, Nick says, just look around town. Does this look like a national emergency, he says?
No, there's not an emergency here. I don't agree that there's an emergency here.
At 2 o'clock in the morning...
Though illegal immigrants keep coming. This family from Honduras has just been dropped at the river down below, joining other families here who've turned themselves into Border Patrol agents. Jessica Valeriano says she came here with her son and her cousin, Barbigal Valladares.
Muy dura. Yo hace como un mes me intentaron arrebatar mi vida. Y entonces yo dejo a mi esposa y una bebé de un año y mi madre. Y pues es muy duro, me duele dejarlos, pero ellas me dijeron que me fuera mejor para morir. Y ella me dijo que vamos a traer un niño.
Critics of the U.S. government's handling of border crossers here say the only real national emergency is how they are often treated when arriving here. For example, on this very chilly evening, U.S. border agents follow orders, they say, from Washington to search them, telling them to remove their shoes and shoelaces and other clothing. Part of the process, border agents say, of searching for weapons, no matter their ages, confiscating much of their personal belongings, toys included. This youth told he has too many shirts on.
There's some trees in my way. You could have gotten across the next, street there.
Okay. Pues cámbiate.
It's unclear how many elected leaders in Washington have come to Roma to witness what happens here each night. While most families here say they've come to the U.S. for a better life, they are finding out rather quickly that the asylum they seek is seldom automatic and increasingly never granted. Many of them have spent their life savings, they say, paying smugglers to bring them here. Only, in the end, to find themselves being marched into U.S. government vans like bad hombres.
Yeah, be advised, transport's going out there to pick up some of those bodies.
For a long ride in the night to a U.S. immigration detention facility 50 miles from here, uncertain how it will all end.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Immigrant Millionaires in Black Neighborhoods, 619-768-2945. And we'll be doing something on this topic, which is immigrant millionaires and billionaires in black neighborhoods once a week. Because this is an ongoing trend. It's been trending, sort of took it for granted. Until Beasley brought up that, you know, some people have traveled 11,000 miles or kilometers to get to this country, particularly black neighborhoods, and set up shop in a business. Well, right now, trending every day, particularly before, matter of fact, during the Trump administration and even now during the Biden administration, which is just practically brand new, you heard some audio clips I played from people that are doing this. And if you go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV, It's My House TV, go to our Facebook page, and at the top of the page there on Facebook, once again, It's My House TV, does your house work hard for you? I've got about three or four maps here. Let's see, one, two, three, yeah, four maps. Now, we're going to concentrate on one destination today. That's Roma, Texas. Roma, Texas. And which is a border town here in the United States. And there are people that are walking. I wanted you to get a visual on this. Matter of fact, before I lose this thought, at first I was going to title today's podcast, I Told You So. And it's a sort of futuristic Told You So, because I believe that within the next 24 to 60 months, some of these people, from children to single mothers with kids to all kind of situations, some of these people that are walking to, and I'm just going with this Roma, Texas. I'm not, there are other border crossings throughout Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. Within the next 24 to 60 months, and that's why I wanted to originally title this program, I Told You So. But when this happens in 24 months, remember, I told you so today in 2021. If some of these people are going to end up millionaires. Now, if we look at if you go to our, once again, page on Facebook, which is It's My House TV, I've got four maps there. And let's start at the, some people are walking from Mexico City, Mexico to Roma, Texas. Now, as you see, that walk is 1,376.2 miles. That's the difference from outskirts, city border to city border. That's the distance between Mexico City, Mexico, and Roma, Texas. If you drive, and most of these people are not driving, that's a 32-hour drive. If you walk it, which many are walking, 428 hours. Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah. Hold on. I'm getting my cities mixed up here. All right. That's from, correct that. That's not Mexico City. That's from Guatemala City. From Guatemala City, Guatemala, to Roma, Texas. If you drove, it's 32 hours. If you walk, it's 1,376.2 miles. Okay. And I know I rented to a lady from Guatemala once. I originally rented to her boyfriend, who happened to be American. And they were working at the same hotel. He was a cook. And she was in the housekeeping, and she seemed cool. So, I said, all right, it's cool if she moved in. No problem out of her at all. But she was from Guatemala. But so, and that was, man, that was back in the early 2000s. So, but, hey, they're walking today. So, that walk is 400, a walk from Guatemala City to Roma, Texas is 428 hours. Now, realistically, it's more than 428 hours because, people make stops and, stuff happens and, resources, food, bathroom breaks. People getting tired and all this, that, and other. All right, the next place I heard somebody from Romania is walking. Now, there's a map that I have on here. Now, obviously, Romania is in Eastern Europe. So that person had to fly. I'm going to take for granted they flew from Eastern Europe. And I don't know where because they're trying to get into the United States. So the flight from Eastern Europe to Roma, Texas, is 6,327 miles. Now, they didn't fly to Roma, Texas, but I'm sure that person flew to another part of Mexico and or Central America. But they've traveled over 6,000 miles, and now not even to the border of Roma, Texas yet. So you got, at least one person from Romania that's done that. Next, Nicaragua. Nicaragua to Roma, Texas. If you drive it, and most of these people, once again, are not driving it, and I have a map on here. Like I say, go to our Facebook page, It's My House TV. We got maps of all this. 45 hours if you drive, but a lot of these people are walking. So that's 582 hours walking. Now you better have some good traveling shoes on. Next city, Mexico City. All right, that's let's take a look at that. So people that are walking from Mexico City or that vicinity, they are, drive time in a car is 12 hours and 2 minutes. That's if you're driving from Mexico City, Mexico, to Roma, Texas. It's 202 hours walking. 202 hours if you walk from Mexico City, Mexico, to Roma, Texas. And if you bike it, it's 56 hours. All right. Now, I put this map up here, these maps up here, so you can get a good idea. And like I said, some of these people, and the majority of them are not going to become millionaires. And that's not the goal of a lot of people that are coming over here. A lot of people are just coming over here for what their idea of stability might be. But some of these people, once again, within 24 to 60 months, that's 2 to 5 years, somebody, we're going to hear stories, success stories, of how there'll be a single mother somewhere in this group, some single mothers, it'll be more than one, that you're going to hear on the news or a human interest story, a magazine or newspaper article, that you're going to hear that they walked over 1,000 miles, traveled over 6,000 miles to come to the United States. And some of these people, they're going to be a lot of success stories. But these success stories, and you'll just hear maybe just a handful of them, these are the ones that would have walked great distances or jumped on a train, riding on the top of a train, hiding where they could on a train. You're going to hear about women with kids. I saw one picture with a mother with two young children, one with a diaper on. You're going to hear stories like this, that they've come over to the United States and they have become millionaires. Now, once again, it's not going to be a whole critical mass of them, but there'll be a good head count. And some of these people would have made money or got their prosperity by setting up shop in a black neighborhood. Because historically, if we look at it, Jewish people have come into black neighborhoods and set up businesses, delis, grocery stores, pawn shops, liquor stores, and they got rich. We're talking about on a family level. We're not talking about Fortune 500. We're just talking about on a family level where the family is set, and they got some generational wealth that they can pass from generation to generation. The Chinese did laundry and groceries and food. Some of these people are enduring. They're walking over 1,000 miles. They're walking over 600 miles. They're walking through jungle in some cases. They're walking through thick brush. They're walking with children. Some, there's a lot of kids, parents, who have just dropped their kids over the border and left them. Now, I don't know what kind of system. I'm sure these people, just like over here, we have, you know, with Amway, Mary Kay, whatever network marketing, they have opportunity meetings. And, you know, an Amway opportunity meeting or a Mary Kay opportunity meeting. You know, they sell a dream. Well, I'm sure that these people, via their social network, in many cases, or wherever they go to worship, back in Guatemala, Nicaragua, Romania, I'm sure they have met people, or, hey, man, got on YouTube or whatever, and they have, what they're holding on, what gets them through the day and the night, what gets them while they're going through their 600 miles or 1,000 miles of walking, risk of being caught, and some other things that are uncomfortable. While they're making this uncomfortable journey, I'm sure a number of them, that their primary dream, actually goal, is getting in the United States is step one. Well, let's say the step, the real big step. But then once they get in here, then they're looking for a black neighborhood. They're looking for a black neighborhood where, you know, that Nine Friends video, audio I played it quite a bit. Where they're looking for a black neighborhood, or it could be any kind of neighborhood, but I'm just using black. Where they're looking for that vacant house. They're looking for that vacant house. That they can go in to see, you know what? During this 600, you know, wherever they're traveling, because some of these people are going to be meeting in their walk of 600 miles, over 1,000 miles, over 6,000 miles, in their travels to get just the aroma, they're going to be meeting some friends or making friends that are going to be lifetime friends. They're going to be meeting business partners along the way. And so when they see a vacant house, they already know what to do. Some of these people are going to come in here and turn neighborhoods around. Neighborhoods that have been neglected by the locals for decades. Now, many of them will be satisfied with, you know, because they're going to be small, you know. They'll be happy with a room to start. And then, you know, they talk about group economics. You know, they'll get together and you know, live in a house together. They got a plan, though. And then, you know, some of the skill sets that they're bringing to the table, and there's a lot of skill sets that they're bringing to the table, it'll be simple things like housekeeping. They're not going to want a 15-hour, they don't have to have, put it this way, a $15 per hour wage. they'll be happy to take anything that somebody offers. Just start. Some that are more entrepreneurial, you know, will start businesses. Some, matter of fact, I would call the people that are traveling up from Nicaragua, Romania, all the little places that are mentioned today, it is the people coming or attempting to get in the United States. Now, the majority of them are not going to get in now, but some of them will get in. Some of them got in. This is an emerging industry. Now, for a lot of some of us that are already over here in the United States legally, this is an opportunity. If you know, there's so much that you can pick from, but you can say, I mean, you know, how can you help people get into this country? How can you help some of these people who've walked a great distance or traveled a great distance? A person who's traveled over 6,000 miles or a person who's walked over 400 miles, that person's hungry, as Les Brown would say. They're not, these people are not coming for reparations. They just want an opportunity. And they're making their own opportunity. So people that are already here, you might have to learn some Spanish now, or even maybe Romanian, wherever else these people are coming from. Because they're coming from the northern borders, too. But for some reason, people don't talk about people entering in through Canada. So they are. There's a lot of opportunity there. There's a bunch of emerging markets that are popping up because of this. And if you study it and prepare yourself, like I've been here, what do you call it, Rosetta Stone for Spanish on my laptop. I need to really get to it on a daily basis. But anyway, a lot of these people have a goal. Man, my dream, there are people that are coming, that are on their way from Romania and other parts of Eastern Europe. There are people from that are coming up, that are marching right now from Guatemala, different parts of Mexico, Nicaragua, and South America. People that are at the border right now, some got through, most did now, but they're coming. And their goal, because, see, they're looking at, man, the Vietnamese came in here, and they're balling out doing nails in black neighborhoods. Or the Koreans came here and, man, that family became millionaires with gas stations or food marts. Or the Arabs came here and all, and the common denominator of all this is black neighborhoods. Not wealthy black neighborhoods, low, moderate to low income black neighborhoods. That's the goal that many of them, not all of them, but many of them, on a critical mass basis, that's the, talk about vision board, that's the vision that they have in their mind. With some of those who are fortunate enough to maybe have a smartphone and use it as a vision board, the picture that they have on their wallpaper is a black neighborhood and a restaurant or whatever, or a garage or a gas station or a food mart or a dry cleaner or a dollar store, that's what they're looking at. That's what they're visualizing.
kill a man. Somebody mess my coat and hat and hand to my walking cane.
Y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, "What y'all finna do?" He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
There are going to be a whole lot of 9 friend stories over the next 5 years. Whole bunch of them. In March, more than 170,000 migrants were taken into custody in the southwest border of the United States, or borders of the United States. Now, I don't know if that number represents 1%, less than 1%, 10%. I don't know. But some got in. Some Matter of fact, there's an underground economy right now, the subterranean economy, that, you know, there are ways that the government knows that the people get in, and there are ways that the government hasn't discovered yet. But in any case, that's why I play Elvin Bishop Traveling Shoes. All these people got traveling shoes on, and that's one of their goals. Some of them know about the various tax sales that counties have throughout the United States. And they're going to these tax sales, and they're practicing group economics, putting their money together, and they're buying homes that way, buying houses that way. Anyway, this is I told you so before. It's happening as we speak. All right, let's go to the phone lines. And we'll do this, immigrant millionaires in black neighborhoods. Now, I'm putting this out here as hopefully a motivator for some people that there's opportunity. If you're close to a black neighborhood or live in a black neighborhood, there's opportunity right where you are right now. If you don't wake up and see it, then somebody else is going to come in and see it, and, you know, and then, you know, you can't blame anybody. I mean, you can try to blame white supremacy or blame the white man, but no. The opportunity is right where you are. You've got to see it, and then you got to be hungry enough or at least creative enough to, well, you know, the Nine Friends house really wasn't that much of a creation. They saw an opportunity. It was a vacant house in a neighborhood. You know, we can't get a bank loan or nothing like that. We don't have a credit score or nothing like that. But let's get together. You know, I'm sure the ladies that were involved with this cooked up some food. You know, they could have had a beer blast or whatever. They bought the materials needed. And, through group economics, they turned it into something. So there's going to be a whole lot of, not going to be, there are, as we speak, Nine Friends stories happening around the clock. 314, your mic is open.
Yeah, L.A., you must have had problems yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I tried to get in Blog Talk, and I even called Viata. She couldn't get in. But it wouldn't, I couldn't even log on, couldn't even get into the studio. So.
I've been having electrical problems. I got some bad circuit breakers. I tried calling some of your friends to come by and do it, but I don't know if they on a hiester or whatever. So I had to call somebody white. They get over right away.
Well, that happened.
Plus, they have American flag on their trucks. Don't have no BLM. But anyway, on this issue here, I'm something else here. On this issue here, using undocumented workers should be punished. A person shouldn't use them undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
They should be punished and fined.
And
you know,
will.
It's funny.
Those who get caught will. Yeah, they're gonna be some that get caught.
And it's funny how that people like Democracy Now! Can go in and photograph and film, but Ted Cruz, a U.S. senator, and other U.S. senators was told they couldn't do no filming.
Hmm.
And another thing, people should wait, should not be waiting for their refugee status hearing while in the United States, because then they'd be having babies.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is happening and will happen.
Right. And undocumented and illegals aren't supposed to be working. So their assets should be seized. They should seize their assets. If you go and work into another country, take an African country. Nigeria or Ghana, if you working and you're not supposed to and you got a bank account, they'll take your money.
Well, that's, you know what, Gorn Houston, if he gets into, I don't know if he's going to get into immigration law, but I'm sure there'll be, I'm sure a lot of people will be able to use his services if he does that.
And them people are not walking no 1,200 miles. Have you seen them people at the border? Them women are full-breasted, got their tight clothes on, got flip-flops. You ain't going to walk no 1,200 miles in no damn flip-flops.
That'll be a pretty rough walk.
What they doing?
Now, what do you think? They're riding? Or how do you think they're coming in?
Yeah, they got buses. You got groups that sponsor
this stuff. Well, yeah, they do have
caravans,
yeah.
Yeah, then they get off for the photo op and walk to be photographed.
Well, it sounds like they organized.
That's right, they organized. Organized,
yeah, organized
to commit crimes. And I don't understand why your black politicians don't speak out against this. That's why come not say they ain't worth a damn two-sided nickel. They are for open borders. I don't
understand. Well, the ones
that
are in Evanston, Illinois, the black politicians in Evanston, Illinois, they're on the reparations train right now. So,
well, that's a housing
program.
That ain't no reparation train. You have some people from the Cobra saying that's nothing but a housing program. And they named it reparations.
Well, you are right.
It's nowhere in the world they can take public money and just give it to black people. That's not going to happen, I don't think. Do you think that's going to happen? How long will you get away with doing something like that? You know, remember the lady that worked for the United States Department of Agriculture, Shirley something Sherrod? And Obama got her fired because she made some kind of statement where it made them to believe that she was just working with black farmers and not white ones. And come to find out, they took her, somebody wrote what she said out of context.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was revealed what she truly said.
I'm going to see if I can get somebody from Evanston, Illinois, particularly one of those, at least some kind of government officials, to come on and see if I can get one of them to break that down. Because what I'm looking at, the little bit I know about it, it has nothing to do with slavery. It's one of the requirements is you have to be connected to somebody that was in Evanston from 1919 to 1969 or something like that. And you're right, it's not, so it can't be linked to, it's not linked to slavery at all.
Well, you know, even that, how are you today supposed to be responsible of what the powers to be of a town made back 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
You cannot be responsible for what was made, decisions that was made by the city council 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
true.
You know what? How they're trying to clean it up. They say, well, we're going to use marijuana taxes. Well, marijuana taxes are supposed to be going toward the things that's affecting you today that you need money for. You're going to take taxes of today and apply them to what you call misjustice at the time, which really at the time probably was not a misjustice. It was opinion. It was public opinion. You know, public opinion sways laws. Let me give you an example. In another country, public opinion says it's okay for you, a male, to have several wives.
Correct. You're like right. Senegal's one of those places.
Yeah. In the United States, if you marry over there and the public approve of it, then they recognize that woman that you married. Now, of course, in the United States, public opinion here says you can't have more than one wife. And not only public opinion, but because of contract, or because of the children that comes out of that contract. But here's the thing. If they say that you can marry over there even one wife, and you can marry two wives, which is okay in that society, but the U.S. only recognizes one wife, well, the wife that you marry over there, if the public was okay with you marrying it, you a U.S. citizen, then the U.S. will recognize her as being your wife. That's public opinion. Just like during the Dred Scott decision, when they said that Dred Scott didn't have no rights that a white man was bound to respect.
Right.
Well, that was a good opinion. Why is that? And people get pissed off when I say that. Because that was the opinion of the public back at that time. Plus, Dred Scott did not inherit any citizenship from his ancestors. His domicile technically could have still been in Africa.
Okay.
So what changed it, of course, was the 14th Amendment. And it only could apply to people that was born after it was ratified. You can't take a law back into the past. Suppose you got locked up. Well, people try to do that stuff. But suppose you, suppose you shot a woman that was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And you only got charged with her murder. Well, suppose that the law changed and say, well, you charged with two murders, the unborn baby and the woman. Well, should they take that law back and not charge you with a second homicide that you done 5 years ago?
Yeah, that's what some prosecutors do now. They charge you with two murders.
Yeah, but if you can't, but if it wasn't against the law, I mean, if it wasn't a point 5 years ago and you killed the mother who was pregnant and they only charge you with her murder, well, should they go back from today and say, well, we're going to charge you with the murder of the child? Hell, you can't do that.
Well, all good points here.
Yeah. So, yes, many of those individuals come and they set up businesses basically within their own grouping.
Right.
And very seldom will they go outside of their grouping.
You know what, that's a very good observation, because I know, like, not only D.C., it's just where I noticed it, D.C., PG County, right outside of D.C., if you go, to a Home Depot or Lowe's in the parking lot, around lunchtime, you might see a Latino lady drive up in the station wagon. And she's got sandwiches. I mean, she's got meals, and she's selling to one particular group of people, her people,
right,
that are the day labor waiting. She's not, I don't know if she'll sell anybody else, but that's the only ones I've seen go over there. But
well,
they,
what they do
they
is
don't
they
go
find
anywhere
a Latino.
Else but her.
Yeah, they find a Latino lady and say, would you supply us food? And that ain't only their group. There's other groups here that do that too. All the Somalis do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
This guy Samba that you're supposed to call in, of course, he's Gambian. But I remember in one flea market he was at, the Somalis used to bring in food. Let's see. We used to call him beans and rice. He used to bring in foods too. I doubt if he come. They kind of funny.
I've spoke to him 3 times.
Yeah,
but it's always people in the background. Always, it's always he's busy when I call now.
Well, he ain't been.
He other people in the background
12 hours all day long. But I've been there
mm-hmm.
and sit with him and eat with him. But they don't like to talk.
No,
I mean, they just don't unless they know you.
They might want to keep a low. Some people like to keep a low profile
for a whole lot of reasons. So
right.
I mean, it's just the way it is. But no, that's how that works with those people that come out of South America. They galvanize amongst people of their culture, and especially their cuisine. They gonna be eating McDonald's because it give them diarrhea.
No, you're right. They don't need that. Well, you're right. I've noticed that the Latino lady drive up in the state. I've noticed the station wagon more than anything else. And
yeah, she's fixing it at the house.
It just makes sense of it. They get in touch with one of their own, and could you prepare food? And they come up, and that's who they patronize them. And
they do the same thing. They'll buy an old trailer and turn it into like a cook wagon and set it up someplace. And they, at lunchtime, people go by there and gather. Now some of them got restaurants. They had one in St. Louis County had a big restaurant, Ruiz. And I, so, you know, that's what I didn't do. But anyway, that's all I got to say. I got to look out.
All right, then. Well, tomorrow, I don't know what we'll come up with. We might do a movie review, Strange Fruit, Warren Houston mentioned. So anyway, on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.